Well, greetings, everyone. I find it very interesting that you prepare a sermon and then you come and get an introduction from Mr. Armstrong. As you'll see as we go along, quite a lot of what I've got here, he actually covered in the broadcast, which is very interesting. I've got a title for those who want to collect titles, The Knowledge Which We Have Been Given. This is what I want to talk about today, because we have been given knowledge which is incredible, quite frankly. And we're at the beginning of the end of this year now, and the beginning of another Roman year. Not God's year, of course, but Roman year. And another date for the return of Jesus Christ has just surfaced, and I thought I'd bring this up, because it illustrates a point. Now, Mr. Armstrong just said there that people claim to follow Christ. They claim this, they claim that, they claim the next thing, but they will not obey him. And we have the same thing within many of the groups out there that are part of still the greater church. Now here's this latest offering. Starts off by saying Herbert W. Armstrong, an end time apostle. Meaning that there could be more, like himself. Although not received by the world as God's apostle, was raised up by God in the 1930s in order to begin this process of restoring truth in his church. So far so good. It was revealed to Herbert W. Armstrong that the world had now come to the end time spoken of in Scripture. It was revealed to him before 1950 that one final world war was coming, and this was just after World War II had ended. Herbert Armstrong was also shown in the late 1940s that a company of 10 nations in Europe would have much to do with the events of the end time. Right down the line, happy with that. Two paragraphs down. Christ had a beginning in life only after being born of Mary, because the one self-existing eternal God, Yahweh Elohim, had begotten Mary with his son. By this act, he added to his name that of being God, who then became Father. What about John 1:1? He says, so God's church teaches that Christ has not eternally existed. Now, did Mr. Armstrong ever preach that? Do we really need to answer that question? Then he claims to be God's end time prophet. He claims a very specific countdown that began in December in 1994. I can't find anything significant about 1994. And he said the next and far more meaningful count and alignment for Christ's coming is on Pentecost 2019. So what about 1260-day tribulation? And Christ returning on Pentecost? You see, this is what they do. They claim Mr. Armstrong, but they can't do anything else, really, because that's where the church started. And then, off they go down a dirt road. The Apostle Paul gave that warning in Romans 16, verse 17. You know this quite well. He says, now I beseech you, brethren, mark them which cause divisions and offences, contrary to the doctrine which you have learned. There's where the problems come in the church. Everybody's split off, and everybody's got their own doctrine. They're not sticking to what they were given, what we were given in the first place. And the knowledge we've been given is priceless. If they don't preach in line with the spiritual heritage that we were given, they're causing division. Now, this is a good time to review the knowledge which we have been given and to make sure we know whereof we stand. So I've got quite a bit of quotes here from Mr. Armstrong, obviously, and some of them are extremely interesting. This is from The Meaning of the Feast of Tabernacles in 1981. He says, now then, I'm giving you an overview. You know, in this church, I leave it to our ministers usually to take the individual subjects. In other words, the branches of the tree, and to keep to the trunk of the tree. I give you the overview purpose of it all. And they bring you the many, many individual points that we need to zero in on and focus down on and magnify the individual subjects. So you'll excuse me if I stick pretty much to the trunk of the tree, because I believe that is what God has called me to do. So, I would only like to add at this point, for all of you who've climbed trees, and many of us I think have, and got stuck at the top, You remember when you go out on a branch? To start with, the branch is nice and thick, and there's nothing around it, the space. You can see where you are, you can see the trunk of the tree. Further down you go, that branch gets thinner and less strong. And you start getting into the leaves. And when you get into the leaves, you can't see where you're going. And eventually, you'll fall off the branch. And unfortunately, there's a whole load of people out there that will unfortunately form the Laodicean church when the Philadelphian era is removed. Not as this man claims that we're already in the Laodicean era, by the way. And Christ said he's outside, he's knocking on the door. He's knocking on the door, he's not with them. Why? Because they're not obeying him, and it's that simple. October, the good news in October, November. Now God speaks to you ministers. Mr. Armstrong wrote, I proclaimed much of Ezekiel's message to Manasseh and Ephraim during the 1930s, the 1940s, and the 1950s. But I was ahead of my time, or else God had deliberately slowed down prophesied world events. We are now coming into the time for proclaiming Ezekiel's message. Strangely enough, we're now 30 years down the road, and when you read some of this, of the things that he wrote, they're now with us. We're living it. And here's a point. Isaiah, Hosea, and Amos all prophesied before the fall of Israel, right? They all prophesied, if you check the beginning, the first verse, the first chapter, they all prophesied from the reign of King Uzziah. Now, if you want to go back and work it all out, Uzziah came to the throne between 80 and 90 years before the fall of Israel, which I find rather interesting because it's roughly that kind of period that Mr. Armstrong has been around, you know, giving the warning. Did they treat those prophets the same? Almost undoubtedly. Almost undoubtedly. Revelation 12, a sermon Mr. Armstrong gave in 81. He says, now I want to begin to fill in other prophecies with it, and some of the other things that are not mentioned in this place. I'd like to show you first one thing about duality of the 1260 days, which of course we've just been listening to in the broadcast. There were two of those, and they were not synonymous, but this flight of the woman into the wilderness was a forerunner of the duality of prophecy, you might say, of the church today. This church, our church, that is to be taken on the two wings of a great eagle to a place of safety. And it's time that we get back to this again right now. I notice that some of our ministers are beginning to speak on it, and it's time that we get back to it. I've not said much about it now for 20, 25 years, because at least one minister was ridiculing the whole idea. And then he adds, as much as the Bible's been ridiculed by, you know, many. And again, I was only speaking about this time of fleeing, not fleeing, but he corrects himself, not fleeing, but being taken to a place of safety. I guess I was just ahead of my time a little bit, but I was in a lot of things. And oh, isn't that so true? Way back in the time of World War II, and even prior to World War II, I was speaking a great deal on the air about the day of the Lord. I thought it would be here almost immediately. Yes, so I was wrong. But you see, Peter was wrong, and all the original apostles, and the apostle Paul were wrong. They thought the coming of Christ was going to be immediately in their time, in their generation, 1950 years ago. So they were wrong. And of course, I had to be a little wrong too, or ahead of my time. But you see, Amos and Hosea and Isaiah were men ahead of their time as well, weren't they? They were giving the news in advance. And that's exactly what Mr. Armstrong was doing. He says, so I've not been speaking so much about the day of the Lord now for some 25 or 30, no, it's more 30 to 35 years or more. But it's time to get back to that now because we're coming into the time very quickly now. So here we are reading this, and from what we can see going on around us, this is where we are right now. So it shows us as a good starting point, which I think is one of the most interesting passage journal reports that we have. When we got together as a group, Mrs. Bowles gave me two or three booklets with all the passage journal reports all printed out. And I just used to sit in bed at night and read through them with my red pen. And when I came to this one, it made me a little angry. Because, you know, I never heard any of this in church. Never heard any of this in church. It was never preached where we were. It did appear in the Good News, I believe, in the following month, I think it was. This is November the 20th, 1979. I think it appeared in the Good News in January 1980. But it's where it's the Pastor General's report and the time we are in now. And the reason I've chosen this is he hits quite a lot of the main subjects that people are messing around with today and altering and so forth and so on. And he starts off by saying, just where are we now in the prophesied panorama of events leading to the end of this age? Both world events and occurrences in the church indicate that we are in the time mentioned in Daniel 12. So, let's turn to Daniel 12, because you see, Daniel 12 is giving us our job description, isn't it? Daniel 12 and verse 1. And at that time shall Michael stand up, the great prince which stands for the children of your people, and there shall be a time of trouble, such as never was since there was a nation, even to the same time. And at that time the people shall be delivered, every one that shall be found written in the book. And many of them that sleep in the dust of the earth shall awake, some to everlasting life, and some to shame and everlasting contempt. But, verse 3, and they that be wise shall shine as the brightness of the firmament, and they that turn many to righteousness as the stars forever and ever. That's our future job. And as kings and priests, that's going to be our job, to turn people to righteousness, to ready them to be taken into the family. Now, King David understood this. We just sang the hymn earlier on, Psalm 51. Just turn back to Psalm 51, if you would. Psalm 51 and verse 11. You remember this was written after the sin with Bathsheba. And David says, cast me not, verse 11, cast me not away from your presence, and take not your Holy Spirit from me. Restore unto me the joy of your salvation, and uphold me with your free spirit. Then will I teach transgressors your ways, and sinners shall be converted unto thee. He was the only converted person around, as far as the ordinary people were concerned. He had, of course, the prophets. But even his second in command, Joab, was as carnal as the day was long. So there was nobody he could convert back then. And as we know, we can't convert anybody. I remember when I first attended church, Mr. Waterhouse gave a sermon. And he said, don't try and convert family. He says, you cannot do it. Only God can convert people. And yet David's saying here, I will teach transgressors your ways. We've just read, we will be teaching, you know, people to righteousness. Why? Because we will be God. We will be in the God family. And they that are wise shall shine as the brightness of the firmament, and they shall turn many to righteousness as the stars forever and ever. That's our future. Verse 4, but thou, Daniel, shut up the words and seal the book, even to the time of the end shall many shall run to and fro, and knowledge shall be increased. And at this point, I'd like to add something I was just thinking about here. We look at that and we look at the world, don't we? If you think of the last 200-300 years, we started off with a steam engine, and the latest toy that we've developed is a missile that doesn't actually need a warhead. It travels so fast that it simply just destroys whatever it hits on impact. Because it hits it at Mach 11 or Mach 12 or something ridiculous. You'll be reading a lot more about those in the press in the months to come, because the Russians have got them, and the Chinese have made one they're prepared to even sell to other nations as an anti-ship missile. In other words, this thing would slam into one of these big American aircraft carriers and slice it in two. No nuclear warhead, no explosive, nothing. Just sheer kinetic energy. But you know, knowledge has been increased in another sphere, hasn't it? It's been increased in the church. Because you know what? The start of this last century, 1900, there was very little knowledge of the church. the Sardis church was almost dead. And then Mr. Armstrong came along, and God worked with him. And let's be honest, read through that autobiography. He had a rough time. He had a rough time. But he learned. 14 years keeping the feast before he was given the understanding of the whole plan of God. Unbelievable. Here's a quote again from Mr. Armstrong. "We have come to that time, the time of the end. Rapid travel to and fro at high speed. We are definitely in the end time. Knowledge has been increased on earth amazingly. We have been going with increasing momentum through the age of invention, the age of science and technology, the air age, the space age, and now the nuclear age. And to that we can add the information age. Now, for the first time in human history, the weapons of mass destruction are being produced that can erase all humanity from the earth." That was written 38 years ago. Now look at where we are. In the 1980s, when this was written, space exploration was limited to the major nations. Now private companies are even involved in space exploration. Two or three of them. And apparently at the moment, reasonably successfully. Even tiny Israel is sending a spacecraft to the moon very shortly. Over 3.9 billion people have access to the internet. Talk about knowledge being increased. You know, you come up against something these days that's different, and you think, well, what's that? You just Google it. And there you get reams and reams and reams and reams and reams of information. Probably 50% of which is not very accurate. But that's another story. God's church shattered and scattered. This is continuing the PGR. In Daniel 12, verse 7, it states, "And when he shall have accomplished to scatter the power of the holy people, all these things shall be finished." So it seems the shattering and the scattering goes on right up until the end. But surely Satan is now endeavouring to scatter and even totally nullify the power of God, the power of God has given to his church. There has been a falling away, though compared to the total number, it's been minimal. And the attack of the state of California was an action calculated to destroy the church of the living God. Yet Jesus Christ, our living head, has used it to draw us much closer to him and to one another. When we look back at what happened in that period of time, there were a few thousand people left out of over 100,000. It was very small. But again, it's almost like a duality in prophecy, isn't it? Because when Mr. Armstrong died, we all know what happened. He then continues, "Our work in the hands of Christ is not yet finished, and he will not allow the work to stop until it is finished. And when will that be? It surely can't be much longer, but we are definitely on the final lap, if not the home stretch, and no definite date can, of course, be set. However, we know that just 6 years later, Mr. Armstrong was dead." Now, lest you forget, let's just remind ourselves of what was done, what we were then a part of. This is a co-worker letter, January the 4th, 1985. Mr. Armstrong writes, "Jesus has said, this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end of this world come. The tithes and offerings of this little church have been proclaiming 1900 years later the gospel of the kingdom and only true gospel started by Jesus throughout Europe after it had gone forth for 19 years of the United States and Canada. It is now true that this gospel is being proclaimed within every nation on earth by the worldwide church of God. We were the largest religious broadcaster on the planet. No other church has proclaimed this true gospel at all." They're not interested in the gospel. They're interested about Jesus. "Following are actual figures you should know of for the year 1984 in comparison with 1981, just 3 years earlier." Now listen to this. This is mind-blowing. "In 1981, 22 million Plain Truth magazines were sent to homes or distributed on newsstands. In 1984, 73 million Plain Truths went out. Monthly circulation soared past 7 million copies. In 1981, 800,000 Good News magazines were mailed. In 1984, that went up to 3.7 million 1981, 191,000 copies of Youth 81 were sent to teenagers and other readers. In 84, it was 1.2 million. In 81, 2 million books, booklets and reprint articles were sent out. In 1984, more than 6 million were sent out. Incredible. In 1981, our mail processing department received 2.5 million letters plus 336,000 telephone requests on our toll-free lines. In 1984, 5 million letters were received, plus 800,000 telephone requests. In 81, 52,000 enrolled in the Ambassador College correspondence course. In 1984, 250,000 people were enrolled in the correspondence course. That is really incredible when you look at the numbers. Mr. Armstrong quotes Matthew 24, verse 14, "This gospel of the kingdom shall be preached in all the world for a witness unto all nations, and then shall the end come." But we know, of course, that all nations won't get it. They can't get it. And they can't get it because of the truth that was revealed to Mr. Armstrong about those two trees that we all got so about. One of the most important bits of knowledge the church has got. Without God's Spirit, you can't obey God. And man was cut off from God in that garden. And only people who've understood over the centuries and today are people that God is working with. That is incredible. I know Mr. Armstrong used to use the example of them after the First World War, and all the troops were marching home. The street was full and full and full and full. And this woman's looking out the window, and she sees her son. And he's out of time completely with everybody else. And she says, "Oh, they're all out of step except my Johnny." You know, and then you look at it and you think, can we really be like that? When you look at what we're speaking to here now, there are thousands at the moment still in the church in various groups. But even so, it is in relation to 7.5 billion people, it's nothing. It's not even a drop in the bottom of the bucket. Nobody understands. The Catholic Church claims to be the kingdom of God on earth. The Mystery of the Ages, right at the very end of his life when he wrote in page 157, chapter 4, "This gospel has now been preached to every nation." Now, we know that Mr. Armstrong did not write that final letter to the church. Mr. Aaron Dean, while admitting that he had written the letter on behalf of Mr. Armstrong, did tell us what Mr. Armstrong was thinking just before he died. He said he really felt he had done the commission and that the purification of the bride was to be next. He didn't expect a great work to continue. So you see, even just before he died, the brain, the mind was still working. And it was still bang on, wasn't it? Absolutely. Mr. Armstrong writing in 81 at the feast. He says, "And today let me tell you I'm happy to report that the church today is in the most perfect condition of love that we have ever been. In fact, I'm a little frightened, brethren, because Satan understands that too. And he's not going to let that stay that way if he can change it. Satan is going to strike this church some way. I don't know how, but I just know he's not going to rest." Anybody to argue with that one? Absolutely right down the line, isn't it? "He didn't like to see this church bound together in love as we are right now. Now he'll strike at any one of you if you will let him. You need to be constantly on your guard because Satan, as a roaring lion, is going about seeking whom he may devour, and he would try to devour any one of you." I think Satan has made mincemeat of the church. Absolute mincemeat. When you look at what people are now believing, and they've gone right off. They've gone off what? If you believe that Mr. Armstrong was God's apostle and that Christ taught him, then who else do we believe? It's just dead simple. It's not complicated. Today, the Church of God is split, according to some estimates, into over 500 different groups. I will build my church. My church at the moment is scattered and shattered. And that was That was prophesied all those thousands of years ago when Daniel wrote. And Daniel hadn't a clue what he was writing. Can you imagine doing that? Somebody saying, right, sit down and just write, type. And you're typing all this stuff and you're thinking, what is he doing? What is this stuff? In the end, poor Daniel says, what's going on? And he says, you've done your job. Relax. You're going to die. You'll stay in the grave until your time comes. And then you'll receive your reward. Boom, boom. Absolutely incredible. As Armstrong says, and then what? In the time of the end into which we entered, many will be purified and made white and tried. But the wise will understand. He said, we are in the time of trying and testing to bring us closer to God and to prepare us for Christ's coming now. But again, he was ahead of his time. This is 38 years ago. But I reckon this is where we are now. And many of us are being tried and tested as never before for our own good. Tried? Tested? How? Why? It's simple. The real test is, are we going to stick to what we were taught in the first place? It's as simple as that. Are we going to stick with what we were taught? Or are we going to go off down a dirt track and end up losing our crown? Which is the warning in Revelation. Are we earnestly contending for the faith which was once and for all delivered unto the saints, as Jude wrote? And Christ himself tells us in Revelation, hold fast that which you have, let no man take your crown. Revelation 3. Hold fast. The fact that he's saying hold fast means it's difficult. There was a thing the other day, a fisherman is on his own, he'd set the boat on automatic, and he was had a net and stuff going at the back or something, and he fell overboard. And he grabbed hold of the net, and it towed him 5 miles to the shore. But he had to hold on, because if he hadn't held on, he probably had died. And we're in the same boat. We literally are in the same boat. We've got to hang on, because this is what we're going to be teaching. We're not going to be teaching that Christ didn't pre-exist before he was born of Mary. You know, but Luke 21:36, we all know very well, but let's read it again. Remember, it's Christ that said this. Watch you therefore, Luke 21:36, watch you therefore and pray always that you may be accounted worthy to escape all these things that shall come to pass and stand before the Son of Man. We have been told we have to hold on to the spiritual heritage that was once and for all delivered to the saints and stay on track. Why? Because that's what we're going to teach. We're not going to teach any other rubbish. There's plenty of hogwash out there at the moment. You can take your pick. In fact, I was talking to somebody this last week, and I just said to them, you know what? You can come up with any stupid idea you want, and then get on the internet, and I'll guarantee you'll find a group that you'll probably feel happy with. It's that bad. It really is that bad. That spiritual heritage came from Jesus Christ and was revealed through his end time apostle. The bride has got to make her ready. How? Well, the bride's got to be totally committed to her husband-to-be. Totally committed. Totally submissive. Totally loyal. Totally obedient. Because once we're married to Christ, we're going to be like him. We're going to have similar kind of powers to him. We're going to be kings and priests sitting on our own throne. We're going to turn many to righteousness. And the only way you can do that is by learning the righteousness now. And that's where we get it from. Mr. Armstrong then goes on and he tackles the daily sacrifices. This is another Lulu now, which is bringing up all sorts of speculations. He says, verse 11, this is Daniel 12, from the time the daily sacrifice shall be taken away, he says, consider this for a moment. This does not imply a material temple to be built in our time in Jerusalem. It does seem to imply the Israelis may restore the daily or twice daily sacrifices, possibly at the Wailing Wall. The indication is the armies of the beast of Revelation 17 entering Jerusalem, and then he quotes Daniel 11:41 and Zechariah 14:2, will stop this daily sacrifice. And here's the interesting bit. While religious Jews have expressed desires over the years about building the third temple, it's always been a rumble in the background. Nothing had been done at the time of Mr. Armstrong writing that in 1980. It was a non-subject. We went up on the Temple Mount in, in the early 70s. And the place was untidy, it was unkempt, there was weeds growing through the thing, hardly anybody about. Now? Here's the interesting thing. The year after Mr. Armstrong died, the Temple Institute was formed in 1987. And if you want to have a look, it's just called templeinstitute.org. And you can go in there and you can see all the stuff they've prepared. It's quite incredible. Their website states their goals. Our short-term goal is to rekindle the flame of the Holy Temple in the hearts of mankind through education. Our long-term goal is to do all that in our limited power to bring about the building of the Holy Temple in our time. When Mr. Armstrong was talking about this in 1980, this was a non-subject, right? Just a few weeks back in the news, you'll recall, temple-ready altar dedicated on the last day of Hanukkah, 12th of the 12th. Although the Passover and daily sacrifice do not require a full temple, they must be done on an altar built according to the requirements of Jewish law and placed on the appropriate spot on the Temple Mount, believed to be several meters east of the Islamic Dome of the Rock Shrine. You see the error there already? Requirements of Jewish law. It's God's law. God told them what to do. Very specifically what to do. Professor Hillel Weiss, a hard-right political activist and temple activist, said he and the temple activists and organizations would begin animal sacrifices immediately if the state allowed them to bring their altar to the requisite spot on the Temple Mount, and declared that the state should be the first to support the resumption of these rituals. That's where we're at today. It's already. If something went pear-shaped today, and Mr. Netanyahu turned to these people and said, right, go ahead, by tomorrow you'd have morning and evening sacrifices taking place in Jerusalem. Back in 1980, wasn't even a pipe dream. Yet again, a man before his time. Mr. Armstrong wrote back in 1980, nothing in the news about the daily sacrifices. Today? Yeah, within 24 hours. Everything is now in place. The altar, the priests, the high priest. They've even got the high priest's thing that he wears on his chest with the different stones on. They've got the big golden candelabra that costs millions of dollars to make. There's millions been poured into this. All the gold vessels, everything. It's all there already. The priests are already chosen, the high priest chosen, literally a phone call. And within 24 hours, this could be happening. That is incredible. But like I say, Mr. Armstrong always seemed to be 10 steps ahead of everybody else. Jesus Christ tells us that we need to understand. He says, this is what we understand from Bible prophecy. All other questions and issues regarding the Temple Mount, Jewish sovereignty, the exact location of the original temples, involvement of Christians, the construction of the third temple, Muslim sites possibly destroyed, Indiana Jones conspiracy theories to find the Ark of the Covenant. These are all distractions, a smokescreen hiding what is actually going to happen. The sacrifices have got to start because they're going to be stopped. All the rest is a smokescreen. And we don't need a temple. In fact, if you just turn back to Ezra, see, the Bible gives us precedence for so many things. You can look back in the Old Testament, and Ezra chapter 3. And again, the timing's interesting, and perhaps it's something we should keep in mind, because God does tend to work in similar manners, and it could well be that this actually happens on the Feast of Trumpets, who knows? Ezra 3 verse 1, and the seventh month was come. trumpets. And the children of Israel were in the cities. The people gathered themselves as one man to Jerusalem. Then stood Joshua, the son of Jehozadak, and his brothers, brethren the priests, and Zerubbabel, the son of Shealtiel, and his brethren, and builded the altar of God of Israel to offer burnt offerings thereon, as it is written in the law of Moses, the man of God. It was many years before the temple was built. Many years. The big questions we've got to look at is what's going to have to happen to allow the Jews to start the evening and morning sacrifices. Do you think if they started them tomorrow, it might start World War III? Like 1.5 billion Muslims descending on Jerusalem? So something big's got to happen. How long will they be allowed to continue before they're cut off? We don't know. But I'll tell you this, if you see them starting, might be a good idea to have your running shoes ready, because I don't see them lasting very long, both from the animal activists' point of view and from the Muslim point of view. The time when these sacrifices are cut off is a major point in Bible prophecy, just 1290 days before the return of Jesus Christ. End time prophecy focuses on Jerusalem, and we are warned to remain alert as events unfold. Now, here's the naughty word, speculation, right? Speculation, and I emphasize, this is speculation, but just think about it. Rumors are doing the round about a proposed peace plan by Mr. Trump, of course, where Jerusalem is to be divided in two, actually three. Half of Jerusalem will go to the Jews and the other half to the Muslims. However, the central area, wherein most of the religious sites are located, including, of course, the Temple Mount, would be internationalized. They would be controlled by the United Nations, and the object would be to allow all religions to have totally free access. Could it be? That could happen now. That peace process is coming up in the first few months of the year, allegedly, unless he changes his mind again, which he's already done two or three times. He knows it's a hot potato. But, turn to Zechariah 14. I saw this and wondered. Again, this is more speculation. Speculation. But you read it and you wonder. Zechariah 14 verse 2. For I will gather all nations against Jerusalem to battle. You see that? It's all nations to fight Christ. All nations, not just the Gog and Magog and the Europeans. Everybody will see Christ as an alien threat. And the city shall be taken, and the houses rifled, and the women ravished, and half the city shall go forth into captivity, and the residue of the people shall not be cut off from the city. Why half the city? Specifically mentions half the city. Could it be that the Jewish half of the city is taken captive? Or maybe it's the other side that's taken captive. But half the city is taken captive, which almost would possibly seem to indicate that the city is divided into two halves. Is that stretching it a bit? Again, it's interesting. It's a point to keep in mind. But we'll see. But it's just very interesting. But here's. I think the major point, if you get nothing else out of this sermon, this is what I want you to get. The world we live in today is going through change. Major change on sometimes a daily basis. Decisions are being made by leaders that seem plain stupid, downright dangerous, or even crazy, right? Mrs. Merkel allowing over 1 million young Muslim males into Europe is a classic example. The world is fast becoming a dangerous place to live. Life is getting more and more difficult, isn't it? You've only got to look at the news. But there's one major point we've got to keep in mind, and that is the spiritual dimension. When I was in college, a third year speech class, you start learning how to prepare sermonettes. And I got given, explained Deuteronomy 11 verse 10. I thought, oh, that's all right, shouldn't be too bad. And I got back and I read Deuteronomy verse 11 verse 10. It says, for the land which you go in to possess is not like the land of Egypt from which you have come, for you sowed your seed and watered it by foot, as in a vegetable garden. And I started to see Mr. Dart's sense of humour. So I had to dig. I had to do a lot of digging. Now, if I in Unger's Bible Dictionary, under the section irrigation, we're told the phrase, water it with your foot, refers to pushing aside the soil between one furrow and another with the foot so as to allow the flow of water. They used to have walled gardens that were very gently sloped because water was not quite in abundance. And what they would do is it had little tiny furrows running down and across, and they'd let the water in the top and it would run down these furrows, and the gardener would just walk along with his foot and just push a bit of soil in there to block that off and take the water off down here to the other plants. Now, if you turn to Proverbs 21, verse 1, and you go to here, add the ellipsis to the actual words. It says, the king's heart is in the hand of the eternal as the rivers of water. And the ellipsis is, are in the hands of the gardener. He turns it whithersoever he will. In other words, as the gardener directs the water to his foot. It takes no effort. You just walk along your foot and push soil over. Or pull it back and let the water come down the other way. The modern translation makes this even clearer. It says, the king's heart is in the hand of the eternal. He directs it like a watercourse wherever he pleases. Now remember, Ephesians 6:12, we have the wicked spirits in high places, don't we? That's what we're dealing with. That's what we're fighting with. That's why we've got to pray every day, rescue us from the evil one. Not deliver. You deliver letters. That word is rescue. We must remember, no matter what is happening around us, God is in total control. He controls the heart of the king, that's all of this world's rulers, with little or no effort. His plan is sure. It will be fulfilled for us and for the whole of mankind. And that's what Job had to learn. You get to Job 42. He says, now I know you can do everything. I think the King James says something like, and now I know that nothing of yours can be withholden from you. A modern translation says, now I know your plan cannot be thwarted. But now he had that confidence. Now, do you want some proof? Turn to Revelation 17. Say, Mr. Cranston jumped ahead of my sermon, didn't he? Revelation 17, verse 12. And the ten horns which you saw are ten kings, which have received no kingdom as yet, but receive power as kings for 1 hour with the beast. And these shall have one mind, and shall give their power and strength unto the beast. Now, oh boy, over the years has this been the cause of speculation. How? Why? Is it going to happen? And you know what? All that speculation was a total, utter waste of time and effort. Drop down to verse 17. We're told, Mr. Armstrong says, let the Bible interpret the Bible. Verse 17 of Revelation 17, for God has put it in their hearts to fulfill his will, and to agree, and to give their kingdom unto the beast, until the words of God shall be fulfilled. And that hit me between the eyes, because I'd never read it like that before. But there it is. You see, God is in total absolute control. And I'm saying this because I know some of you get like me. I go through some of this news and you feel like swinging from the rafters, because people are, you know, things are being done that are stupid. This whole lesbian, gay, transgender and all the rest of they're putting tampon dispensers now in boys' toilets because they might be having a period. So we shouldn't be getting angry at this. What we should be doing is realizing that God's allowing this to happen to our people. They're getting so mixed up, they think they can just change sex. I'm now a woman. Excuse me, where's my wig? You know, and I can now use the ladies' toilets, so I can now use the facilities and that. Not right over, the tennis player made a comment about playing tennis against ladies who had male attributes. We live in a world that's sick. We live in a world where the parents of a little 11-year-old boy let him dress in drag and perform in sex club in front of leering paedophiles. And nobody does a thing about it. That's normal. And you can't criticize it. God has put it in their hearts to fulfill his will. And his will is to let our people, Britain and America particularly, and of course the other European nations that are all part of Israel, to really get down into the mire. And then the Assyrians are going to come along and literally squidge them into the mire, as you read there back in Isaiah. Our people have gone so far off track. And it really can't go on much longer, because people, it's like Sodom and Gomorrah. God had to destroy them. And Mr. Waterhouse, going on to the timing, he says, why did God step in at that point? He says, I think it was because if he hadn't, those people's minds would have got so perverted and so twisted that when they were resurrected in the great white throne judgment period, we wouldn't stand a chance of getting them straight again. Why do you think it's 100 years? It's going to take 100 years. When I get the guy that invented the tie, I'm going to make him wear one for 50 years. So there you have it. Everything that goes on in the universe, I was going to say on this planet, in the universe, only goes on because God allows it to happen. That is a key factor. Then you've got the abomination that makes desolate. Oh, this is another Lulu, isn't it? Oh, boy. There are more versions of this than you can shake a stick at. Mr. Armstrong in this PGR. So this refers to Daniel 11:31 and Matthew 24:15. Talks about the armies of Antiochus Epiphanes taking over Jerusalem and putting a statue of Jupiter Olympus in the Holy of Holies of the temple. But Mr. Armstrong points out Luke 21:20. He said, it speaks of Jerusalem compassed with armies. He says, this is the correct meaning of this abomination. It's the armies, not a statue, that makes Jerusalem desolate. And from that point on, there's 1290 days. And he says, blessed is he that waits and comes to the 1335 days. And he says, never before have we understood these periods of 1260, 1290, and 1335 days. But it seems evident now, a blessing is pronounced on us, God's church, who wait and endure until the 1335 days, approximately 1335 days prior to Christ's coming. But since no one can know the day or the hour of his coming, we probably shall not be able to know the exact day that is this 1335 days begins. Now, as we get nearer the time, I think it will become obvious. The very first thing is, but apparently that is the time when our work shall end. Now, at that time, you could not end the work of God in one day. It wasn't possible. We had offices all over the world. Today, it's all on the internet. In 24 hours, we could be shut down. Boom. End of story. That will be the time when the united Europe shall appear, the revival of the medieval Holy Roman Empire. Now, that could happen, and we could live as this is formed. It could take weeks. It could take a few months. But we'll be watching, and you'll be seeing a strong man. You'll be seeing him tied up with the Pope. Nothing much happening with Rome at the moment, is there? But remember, the last time they got into trouble was a year or so back. Where did they all go? They all traipsed down to Rome. And the third one's also interesting. We will be warned and readied to be taken to a place of refuge and safety from the great tribulation. How? We don't know. 45 days later, the beast armies will surround Jerusalem. That's 1290. 30 days later, the great tribulation will probably start with a nuclear attack on London and Britain, and possibly the same day or immediately after on the United States and Canadian cities. And the inference in prophecy is there's no retaliation. So what's going to happen before that period? The great tribulation, we shall then fully realize, is the time of Jacob's troubles, spoken of in Jeremiah 30, verse 7. And he goes into that quite extensively. And then he talks about protection for Philadelphia. He says, but while this most terrible tribulation is happening to our people, shall we as God's church be protected? He says, my son Gardner Ted, and I've just added here, plus several others over the years, are scoffing in derision about our being taken to a place of safety during the Great Tribulation. And he says in bold then, does Revelation 3:10 mean what it says? So let's go to it. Revelation 3:10. Because you have kept the word of my patience, I also will keep you from the hour of temptation or trial which will come upon the whole world to try them that dwell on the earth. And he mentions Unger's Bible Dictionary under article on the Great Tribulation refers to Revelation 3:10, showing the Great Tribulation covers the whole earth. It covers the whole earth. And in fact, when you look at Revelation and you look at some of the earthquakes and all the rest of it that happened, the actual earth itself is in tribulation. The physical earth is literally upturned and turned over and transformed and re-landscaped, frankly, ready for the millennium. No other such time of worldwide trial and trouble is prophesied. A Bible I formerly used had in the marginal reference on Revelation 3:10 or the Great Tribulation. It was probably an earlier edition of Moffat that Mr. Armstrong was very fond of using. Also, Revelation 12:14 shows the church being flown into a place of safety. Satan will make war with the remnant of the Laodicean church, which leads up to Christ's coming. And then he has an article on the place of safety. Again, something that there are more ideas about this out there than hot breakfasts. We don't know. Mr. Armstrong, I gave a series of sermons. I think you also gave some sermons on Petra. You end up at the end of it saying what Mr. Armstrong said. If it's not Petra, we haven't a clue. The Bible seems to indicate it could be, but it's in the wilderness, and we'll be protected, and we'll be sustained. That's it. Moving on. We don't have to worry about it. This is a co-worker letter, August the 14th, 78. Undoubtedly, Germany will head the new resurrected Holy Roman Empire. Interesting in the news that America was toying with the idea of offloading a whole bunch of ballistic missiles in Europe. And the Germans turned around and just said to them, not in Germany or anywhere else in Europe. What does that tell you? Who's making the rules? Who conquered the German armed fist twice in two great world wars? It was Britain and the United States pouring in the real knockout power. Who will go forth to destroy Britain and the United States? Read the latter portion of US and prophecy booklet showing that our cities will be destroyed, Ezekiel 6:6. A third of our population shall die from disease epidemics caused by famine, and another third shall be killed by military action, and the remaining third scattered as slaves in Europe, probably in South America. Ezekiel 5 verse 12. Our work will be ended soon after the resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire, the impending United States of Europe. The Laodicean era of God's church, the seventh and final era, will exist during the Great Tribulation. It's not out there yet, but the attitude is out there. But our Philadelphia and era brethren are promised divine protection to be taken to a place of safety, Revelation 3:10 and 12:13-16, which please read. So we read them. Revelation 3:10. This is Jesus Christ talking. This is like kind of like solid. Doesn't get much solider than when he speaks. Quote, because you have kept the word of my patience, I also will keep you from the hour of temptation or trial that will come upon the whole world to try them that dwell upon the earth. And then Revelation 12, this is what he was talking about on the broadcast as well. And power was given unto him to continue 40 and 2 months, prophetic months, literally 1260 years. It actually continued from 554 to 1814. When Napoleon was finally dethroned. Verse 13. And when the dragon saw he was cast upon the earth, he persecuted the woman who brought forth the man-child. And to the woman were given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly to the wilderness into her place, where she is nourished for a time, 3.5 years. And the serpent cast out of his mouth water as a flood after the woman, that he might cause her to be carried away. So you get the impression here of an army coming after the people who are taken to the place of safety. That army disappears into a hole in the ground if you read the rest of the story. And I believe, from what I can remember of studying something 50 years ago, that happened, could happen in exactly the same place as Korah, because it was somewhere near that area, near Petra, where Korah went down into the ground. And it would just be rather poetic, actually, if it happened like that. It says, and the earth helped the woman, and the earth opened her mouth and swallowed up the flood, which the dragon cast out of his mouth. And the dragon was wroth with the woman, and went to make war with the remnant of her seed, which keep the commandments of God, and have the testimony of Jesus Christ, but they didn't believe it. They didn't believe it. In the tribulation, they will. In the tribulation, they will. I still wonder if before we actually get to the end of the age, if some of the people who've been in the church over the years and who've gone off are suddenly going to get woken up. That God's going to just give them a bit of a shake and they suddenly wake up one morning and look at the news and think, it's all happening. It's all happening. Remember the parable about the penny a day? People start work at 6 in the morning, agree to work for a penny a day. Some come in at 12 o'clock, 3 o'clock. Some come in at 5:30. They work for half an hour and they get a penny. And the people that started at 6 o'clock in the morning got a bit upset about that. And they were just told straight, you agreed to work for a penny, you got a penny. Happy are you? Think about it. As I say, there are great things going to be happening, and we're on the cusp of them right now. We really are. This is from the Church in Prophecy, March 28, 1881. And he goes into Revelation 12:13-14, which we just listened to the broadcast. I mean, the dragon saw that he was cast to the earth. He persecuted the woman, which brought forth the man-child. And to the woman, now this is the church. This is not just the leader of the church. This is the whole church. To the woman were given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness, into her place, where she is nourished for a time and a times and a half, 3.5 years. So this group of people are promised to be taken to a place where they're safe and they're fed, which is very interesting. Now this 3.5 years, not a day for a year, but a day is a day and a year is a year here. This is only 3.5 short years at the end time. Before the end time, back in Middle Ages, the day was a year being fulfilled. In other words, that original was the 1260. Now we're looking at literally 3.5 years. She will be protected for 3.5 years. That's the duration of the Great Tribulation. The church is to be taken to a place of safety, and I've been preaching that for the last, well, how long? 30, 35, 40 years? I've been proclaiming that. Now I want you to notice, this time she is to fly on the two wings of a great eagle. The first time in the Middle Ages, the church had to go on her own power. She had to flee on her own feet. But now she's to be taken to a place of safety. It's a different time altogether. And I don't know how God's going to do that. And this is the thing, we don't know so much. But when Jesus Christ says, I will do this, then it's going to happen. The only example we've actually got is Lot. Just turn back to Genesis 19. It's very hard for us today to read the story with Lot and not to wonder as to what was going on in the society, for instance, and also within his head. But needless to say, it was an incredible time. Lot sat in the game of the gate at Sodom. Verse 16, and while he lingered, the men laid hold of him. In other words, he greeted these men, who were angels, into his home, and then the people started clamoring at the house, you remember, and the angels just blinded them, sent them all home, basically couldn't see where they were going. And then they told him straight, you know, go and check out your family, friends, anybody, just tell them, now we've got to go out. See, it wasn't just limited to Lot. And he did it, to put it mildly. And while he lingered, in verse 16, and while he lingered, the men laid hold upon his hand and upon the hand of his wife and the hand of his two daughters, for the Lord being merciful unto him, and they brought him forth and set him without the city. Now, whether they dragged them through the streets or whether they just literally transported them outside the city, we don't know. And basically, a modern translation just says, hurry and escape there, for I can't do anything until you go. They were restrained, the angels were restrained from doing their job until they got Lot to safety. Which is rather interesting. But they were taken. They were taken. And then Mr. Armstrong goes into the Great Tribulation. Daniel 12 verse 1. This is back in the original PGR we were looking at. And at that time shall Michael stand up, the great prince that stands up for the children of thy people, and there shall be a time of trouble such as never was since there was a nation. And he says, compare that to Matthew 24, verses 21, 22. Then shall follow the coming of Christ, the resurrection of the dead in Christ, and the kingdom of God. Now notice what Jeremiah adds at this juncture. This is Jeremiah 30, verse 7. Jeremiah 30 verse 7. Alas, for that day is great, so that none is like it. It is the time of Jacob's trouble. I don't think we yet can grasp what's actually going to be happening here. But we know there are going to be people martyred. We know there are people that are going to be... we have this mark of the beast, of which again, there's myriads and myriads of ideas about it. But you can't buy and sell. I mean, we've got the technology now. They're talking about microchips because it's so convenient. You go to work, you just put your hand in front of the thing, walk through the door and yeah, put your hand over the scanner in the supermarket and pay for your bills. It's wonderful. The trouble is, they kill your chip, you're dead. You can't do anything. And the technology is with us right now. Even in Britain, they're talking about it. So for then shall be great tribulations, which as was not since the beginning of the world to this time, no, nor ever shall be. And except those days should be shortened, there should be no flesh saved or saved alive. But for the elect's sake, those days shall be shortened. Think about that. For our sake. For our sake. Why? Because if they're not shortened, we won't have anybody to govern. If you want a kingdom, you know, you need territory, you need laws, and you need people. And we're talking here, and it talks in Isaiah about being few men left. So, the fact that we stay true to what we've been taught means we get to teach that in the millennium. But it also applies here. Because we've done that, all those who do that, for the elect's sake, God will bring an end to that early. So where are we now in prophecy? This is Mr. Armstrong again writing 30 odd years ago. Way ahead of his time. But this applies now. The whole world is now in chaos. Anybody want to disagree with that? Can you think of any nation at the moment where it's peaceful and tranquil and happy and not under any sort of threat? We now have entered the world crisis at the close of this age. But even now Daniel was told, the wicked shall do wickedly and none of the wicked shall understand, but the wise shall understand. Since this very word of God reveals that sin is the transgression of the law, those who encourage the breaking of God's laws, teaching that it is done away with, as nearly all sects and denominations do, are in Bible technology the wicked. That's our nation. And who are the wise, and who shall understand? The fear of the eternal is the beginning of wisdom, a good understanding of all those who do his commandments. That's Psalm 111, verse 10. That's an easy one to remember. And you know, when you look at the Bible, you find that right at the very beginning, God taught his law. It doesn't say that specifically, but Cain slew Abel. It was murder. He broke a law. If the law hadn't been there, it wouldn't have been a sin. It wouldn't have been a crime. And all through the Bible, restated in Exodus 20 and so on, all through the prophets, all through the New Testament, how many times did Christ say, "If you love me, keep my commandments"? And the last time he says it, it's right at the end of the book of Revelation. And yet people will still say the law's done away with. How incredible. How deceived. We're told to watch. Turn to 1 Thessalonians 5. Every time you look at the scripture, you take a different tack on it. You see, Paul's talking to a bunch of people here who are watching. Remember the timing. We're looking in the early 60s AD. The temple was destroyed in 70. Paul was killed sometime during that, about the mid-60s, I believe. So they were looking at an unstable political time, just as we are today. First Thessalonians 5, verse 1. "But of the times and seasons, brethren, you have no need that I write to you." Why? Because they were clued up. They were being taught. They were watching. They were looking. They were awake. "For you yourselves know perfectly well the day of the Lord so come as a thief in the night." That's the warning that went out to people. That's how it's going to happen. You don't know when the thief in the night comes. You wake up in the morning and find you've been burgled. "But when they shall say peace and safety, then sudden destruction comes on them as travail upon a womb with child, and they shall not escape." The fact that they're saying peace and safety would almost seem to indicate that at this time there hadn't been for a while. Remember what Mr. Armstrong said? A financial collapse, a worldwide financial collapse, could cause the collapse of civilization. We could be going through a rough time before we actually are taken to a place of safety. We come out the other side of it and things start to look rosy. And then the Germans remember who caused all the problem in the first place. That is the 1260 day mark. When they say peace and safety, sudden destruction comes on them, Israel. "But you, brethren, are not in darkness that this day should overtake you as a thief." Certain events are going to happen. Those sacrifices are going to start at some stage. There's going to be a collapse, a financial collapse. It's got to be. It's inevitable. There's so much debt in the world now. It's crazy. I want to know who the guy is that owns all that debt. You know, America's paying $1.5 billion a day in interest. I think it was in the news the other day, one of the articles I put up. $560 billion a year. Crazy. And rising. "You are children of light and the children of day." We're not in the night or in darkness. We know what's coming. We don't know how. We don't know when. We know what's happening. We know what overall. We have that overall framework. "Therefore, let us not sleep as others do, but let us watch and be sober. For they that sleep in the night and they that be drunken are drunk in the night. But let us who are of the day be sober, putting on the breastplate of faith and love, and for a helmet the hope of salvation." The whole series of sermons Mr. Bowles did on the armour of a Christian. That's what we need to be working on. "For God has not appointed us to wrath, but to obtain salvation." We're not the object of his wrath. He's saving us out of it. "Who died for us, whether we wake or we sleep, we should live together with him. Wherefore, comfort yourselves together and edify one another, even as you also do." And it's quite amazing when you get up to give a sermon and one of the hymns ties in exactly with what you're going to talk about. Mr. Armstrong tied in exactly what he was talking about. I read the pastor's report this morning, and here's a news item that came in. As I was reading it, the old ding-dong went on the computer, and Mr. Bowles is talking about racism being a problem at the end again. "Christmas carols were playing, and the scent of ginger hung in the crisp December air. Students sold organic plum compote and served mulled wine in biodegradable cups made from sugar cane." But then there were the postcards. This is in Germany. Islamization? Not for us, red one. Defend yourself. This is your country, urged another. Fortress Europe, said a third. Shut the borders. Their aim, to bring down liberalism and rid Europe of non-European immigrants. Who are these people? They go under the title, basically, of AFD, Alternative for Germany. This group operates from within. The new right seeks to distance itself from the old right, which in Germany means neo-Nazis, of course. Many analysts and officials consider this more than a clever rebranding. They are deeply anti-democratic, often anti-Semitic, and openly racist. There you have it. Funny how these things all just fall into place, isn't it? I looked over the last month in the news, and you remember what Mr. Armstrong said over the years. Trade wars between USA and China are gathering pace, also between Germany, Europe, and America. German car manufacturers have been told that they're going to be sort of slamming with huge tariffs. Brexit, total chaos, absolutely total chaos. The people voted to leave, the government wants to stay. We look at the earth itself, earthquakes, volcanoes. They did a thing that, again, this morning it came up, this Krakatoa, or son of Krakatoa, is collapsed. That's why the tsunami. The last time that happened, Krakatoa, I believe, is several thousand feet high, and the if that had happened to today on that scale, the death toll would have been millions, literally millions. Because that whole area now has got cities, all, and they're all at sea level. And this was a 100-foot tsunami. The whole world's drowning in debt. America alone, $22 trillion. The stock market has been jumping up and down. It's suddenly let back up again. But it says here, instability is not something that is a desirable thing on Wall Street. He says, and right now we're witnessing extreme volatility on a daily basis. Doesn't spell good. The multinational corporate business model for outsourcing and offshoring American jobs overseas to cheap foreign labor countries is responsible for General Motors recently announced mass layoffs. It wasn't because of tariffs. It's because the people in charge, the bankers, decide that they can produce the vehicle cheaper in China or whatever, and they make more money. They're not interested in America. They're not interested in the people having jobs. Now we've got the big problem where Mr. Trump snuck into Iraq to say hello to the troops and then snuck back out again. But he was spotted, and he was spotted by somebody in England, by one of these folks with a nice long lens who had to be taking photographs of aeroplanes going over Yorkshire. And there was Air Force One. As clear as day. Nasty things, long lenses on cameras. Endless war has now been normalised. Wars and rumours of wars. Germany to Trump. Don't think about using air bases for nukes. German Foreign Minister Heiko Maas warned this week that the US better not be thinking about stationing its intermediate range missiles in Germany or anywhere else in Europe for that matter. Ooh, what does that tell you about the German attitude towards Europe? They're already telling people it's our decision. Former German Chancellor Gerhard Schroeder has said the US treats Germany like an occupied country. That's done, going down like a lead balloon. See what's happening? German opinion has been pacifist for the last 70 years. But now it's all changing. And it's changing. And we've got the European elections in May. And the people in charge are worried because they know full well that the right is going to gain quite a lot of control. It might even gain absolute control. And that would be well in line with prophecy. Of course, Brexit's supposed to happen in March. Now Israel's got an election, I believe, is it in April? There's a lot of chaotic events that are coming out. Witchcraft moves to mainstream in America. There are evidently more witches now than Presbyterians. You know, it's interesting. You go back in history, the 1800s, late 1800s, Queen Victoria went into all this. and it became the fashion to have seances and Ouija boards, and it was all fakery. But then you had the First World War, didn't you? And after the First World War, it actually came back, and you had the Second World War. Does it make you wonder a little bit? God's a bit angry about this. And now we're in a situation where there are more witches in America than Presbyterians. Japan returns to militarism, another country that was knocked out of the war, not allowed to fight, nothing, everything's for defense and so on. Now they're modifying one of their helicopter carriers to carry F-35s, because the F-35 only needs a few yards, definitely, to get off the ground. Democrats introduce a bill calling abortion a human right. Yeah. It's actually called a human right. What a perversion. As he said, a perversion of the English language which exceeds even George Orwell's newspeak. Thanks to Mr. Obama and Netflix, children are sexually assaulting other children at alarming rates, becoming a big problem. Why? Because they're watching on their phones. Yeah. Latest victory for transgender campaigners. UK children will be taught that all genders can have periods in new sex education lessons in a victory for the transgender rights campaigners. What sort of a mind are we dealing with? Well, you're dealing with wicked spirits. Mandatory implementation of microchips in employees. Where's that? It's in England. Donald Trump and his trade wars. Donald Trump hits out the EU army, I thought was rather good. He said the whole idea of a European military didn't work out too well in World War I and World War II, did it? He said, but the US was there for you and always will be. All we ask is you pay your fair share of NATO. Families divided. Nearly half the US adults have had a relative in jail or prison. 6 in 10 US citizens get medical aid, government aid. Across Europe, the only certainty is uncertainty. See where this is going? But meanwhile, the German army will be strengthened with a 6th tank battalion in response to rising security concerns in Europe. It's a whole battalion of tanks that they've had all stored away. And then, of course, you've got this conference that they had in Israel linking the Christians with the Jews as far as the temple grows. Meanwhile, crops are rotting in the fields because China's refusing to buy them because of the trade war. So American farmers are planning to plow it back into the ground. Yale now sells abortion drugs from a vending machine. These are the leaders of tomorrow's world, if things were to continue. Yeah. And the US is spending $1.5 billion on debt interest every single day. So, we end up where we started. We have got to earnestly contend for the faith that was once and for all delivered to the saints. For there are certain men crept in other ways who were before of old ordained to this condemnation, ungodly men, turning the grace of our God into lasciviousness and denying the only Lord God and our Lord Jesus Christ. And remember what Christ said to us, individually to us, to you and me, behold, I come quickly. Hold that fast which you have. Let no man take your crown.